Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of A Little Wisconsin Sense on our coffee break for this Tuesday, August 30th. If you're listening on the radio at WXCO, Bull Falls Radio out of Wausau, thank you very much. If you are catching us later as a podcast on Apple or Spotify, there are a couple of ways to listen to us live. If you're free from 8 to 11 on weekday mornings, you can go to the TuneIn app or tunein.com. You can use your smart speaker as well to say play WXCO on TuneIn. And of course, we've got our live stream going up on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Bull Falls Radio each day. Our email address, if you want to send us a note, is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Brewers were winners last night against Pittsburgh, which shouldn't be an exciting thing, but given how Pittsburgh seems to have had the Brewers' number this year, that's a good thing. Garrett Mitchell had the go-ahead home run and game-tying home run, and then Keston Hira walked it off in the ninth inning. So the Brewers are getting really close to 100 million fans in franchise history, including a few hundred thousand that saw them in 1969 as the Seattle Pilots. So there's been talk that, you know, some big things are going to happen to become that 100 millionth fan at American Family Field, something that, could happen any moment. And so this morning, the club was expected to announce what it was going to do to thank the fans. And those details came out this morning. So the Thanks 100 Million ticket offer will feature $6 tickets for the terrace or the loge bleachers, and an additional $6 concession merchandise value loaded onto the ticket for any September or October weekday home game. And they will be on sale 10 a.m. Wednesday through midnight Thursday. So during that 38-hour window, if fans go to brewers.com/100 million, so that's brewers.com/100 million, to buy up to 8 tickets, and then the barcodes on those tickets can be used at the concession kiosks to redeem the extra money loaded onto it. So, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, they're thanking you. They're giving you kind of a cheaper ticket and a little deal off the concessions, knowing full well you're probably going to spend a little bit more than that. Now, you know, for those who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford to go to a game, this is a great deal. I'm just saying that somebody like me, you know, I'm going to go in there, I'm going to head into the gift shop, and I'm going to be like, oh yeah, I'll get that Brewers hoodie or whatever and spend probably a little bit more than I got in the discount. But that's a risk I'm willing to take, Luke, because frankly, the hoodie might be the way to go. The only baseball hoodie I've got is, it's got a big San Diego Padres logo on it, because it was from my one visit to Petco Park in San Diego, where we dressed for Southern California weather, and it was an unseasonably cool evening at Petco with the wind blowing, and so they made money on the hoodie sales that night.
Especially if you didn't come prepared, yeah. Well, I believe the hoodie, I don't know if I ever buy my merchandise from the ballpark itself, even if I do have a credit. Just because my mother taught me to just shop a sale and use coupons and everything like that. So this is kind of equivalent to a coupon, but I'm much better off at Kohl's or TJ Maxx to get some of my merchandise.
Can I use my Kohl's bucks there, or my
Kohl's cash
bucks? You know, yeah, Kohl's cash, you know. If you have, I don't know if you've looked at the numbers, but do you know the breakdown between how many watch games at County Stadium versus American Family Field?
Well, what about Miller Park? Come on.
Miller Park, I don't see that here. I just see American Family Field listed. So, must be a typo. It says
there's been two seasons of AmFam Field, and we're just going to completely erase Miller Park.
It's what it is now. It is what it is. American Family is it's a Wisconsin-based company, unlike what Miller has become now, and Miller, the corporate execs there were offered repeatedly to re-up on the naming rights. They blew it off. It went to a different a company that's actually located in Wisconsin. Does Miller Park sound better? Yeah, it flows well, but I'm not going to fault the team if they kept, you know, trying to say, hey, you want to renegotiate this? And, you know, the other side kind of treated them like, you know, you'll have to give this to us.
My upsetness, I guess, or whatever, like, whatever you want to call it. It's because it's not anger. It's just it irks me a little bit. It's irksome. It's irksome. But yeah, that my irk lies with Molson Coors, not American Family Insurance. I understand.
Yes.
But at the same time, I don't necessarily believe that insurance companies should be spending hundreds of millions of dollars on licensing rights to stadiums, because they could just lower insurance premiums.
Oh, that's what I say all the time about the endless commercials for Geico and Progressive. I don't need to see Flo. I don't need to see, you know, a lizard. And that is an insane amount of money that is going into that. So I'd rather have it go to naming rights for a ballpark than something else. But yeah, I'd rather see my premiums come down. To answer the question I posed to you, it was at County Stadium, just over 45 million fans. And so far at AmFam, about 53 million fans. And then about just shy of 700,000 watched at something called Six Stadium, S-I-C-K apostrophe S in Seattle. No wonder they didn't keep the team. More after this. You're up north. You stole my heart. Welcome back to Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We were talking in our last hour about law enforcement and local budgets, and that while there are fewer police officers on the streets across Wisconsin for various reasons, the percentage of local budgets that are dedicated to law enforcement has gone up at the expense of pretty much all other services because of the tremendous squeeze that the Republican-led legislature has put on those local budgets. So while we talked about it through the context of law enforcement in the last hour, I wanted to touch a bit on right here about what it is doing to our local schools in Wisconsin, our local public schools. And you, again, heard that referenced by State Senator Jeff Smith yesterday and by other guests in the past, when they've talked about their priorities, what they would do differently. And Senator Smith put it rather bluntly that we need to stop paying for two school systems in the state. And I have to admit that I am rather surprised that that line isn't used more often and that it doesn't get more traction, because we do have two systems of public, we have two education systems that state taxpayers pay for. And you're paying a lot more than you know, and you're not paying for the public schools in your hometown as much as your property tax bill would say that you are. It's something that we explained at Up North News, probably one of our first stories in early 2020, that where Julian Emerson really helped illustrate this for us. And I thought it was such a good lesson that I wanted to bring that up to talk about the two school system aspect of our budget. And it all came up when the Eau Claire County Board 2 years ago was looking at an honorary resolution that would mark School Choice Week. And, you know, that's something that has been marked at the state, the national levels, and occasionally supporters of school choice will get these resolutions going at the county and local level. And on Eau Claire, a group of people said, you know what, not so fast. Let's talk about this, because this is, it's not just about a parent's choice on where their kid goes to school. It relates to our lack of choice on whether we want to pay for that, whether it's private schools that are nonprofit, private schools that might be for-profit, or religious schools. Now, I don't have the latest figures in front of me. I'm going off the 2020 story, but I would imagine things are not that much different. When in the 2020 number, it showed that Wisconsin taxpayers shelled out $350 million on school vouchers, and that those vouchers were going to 43,000 students. Now, again, that's 2 years ago, and I apologize for not having the latest numbers in front of me, but you get the general idea of what we're talking about here. And there are real concerns about the impact of that funding shift. You know, school choice is just another term for voucher schools and the taxpayer funds that hurt our public schools. And that, again, might be news to folks that think that any state support to voucher schools is some kind of new money. But in fact, some of it is being skimmed off the top of a pot that had always traditionally and was always intended for public education. The backlash is definitely not an isolated event. It's something that more people are hearing about, that it's gotten so much bigger than it was when originally proposed in 1990 by former Governor Tommy Thompson and some Democrats and Republicans in the Milwaukee area. There, it has spread throughout, you know, the state, the school choice and voucher schools and state support of them. And that increased spending across the state means less funding is available for the 421 public school districts in the state. Every one of those districts is impacted, whether there's a voucher school nearby or not, because voucher school dollars come from the same budget pot that pays public schools. The voucher disbursements are made first, and then the public school disbursements occur. In addition, and this is the real kick in the pants, the cost of private voucher schools to the taxpayer does not show up as a separate item on property tax bills, at least it didn't in 2020, because Republican legislators lumped it into the levy for public school districts, making it appear the public school district alone is responsible for tax dollars, even though that includes some money that the public school district never receives. So all told, public school districts lost out 2 years ago on $145 million in funding. And so voucher school advocates say the program allows students who couldn't otherwise afford to attend private school to do so, but a whole lot of students who attend private schools did not transfer from public schools. They were always going there. It's just that as the voucher program expanded, it now included them. According to DPI, the Department of Public Instruction, 82% of students receiving voucher payments attended private schools the year before. So again, this is not some kind of a new choice where parents are pulling their kids out of public schools, putting them into private schools. They were already there. The difference is now they're just getting more of the money that you're paying and you were thinking was originally going to your public local school, and it is not. But this is again the kind of thing that we talked about with law enforcement in the last hour, schools in this hour, and it's something that is targeted and basically robbing money from certain communities, especially the community of Milwaukee. Our friend Dan Schaefer over at the Recombobulation Area has a very well-read column about that's titled "The State of Wisconsin is Defunding Milwaukee," and he goes into great detail about how, because of budget limits and other restrictions put on the legislature, there's a lot of money that is collected in Milwaukee County or in the city of Milwaukee, but it goes to the state for then disbursement. And because of the way they've written the laws, that money doesn't come back to Milwaukee. It gets spread out throughout the state. So Milwaukee is a giver and the rest of Wisconsin is a taker. Through the shared revenue payments that go to local municipalities, the amount Dan writes has been steadily rising, but the amount coming back to the city and the county have remained flat, which amounts to a major budget cut in inflation when you, you know, when you can't keep up with expenses. This is something that's probably going to happen for a while, because Republicans have been able to make so much political hay out of demonizing Milwaukee, and by demonizing public education, and by hiding behind the badges of law enforcement, but, you know, not really doing anything to help the cities that have to fund those police departments, that things are going to be this way for a while. And so why bring it up? Because it's not going to change until more people understand how this legislature works. How legislatures work is not the kind of sexy conversation that makes for great radio, newspapers, or local news. It, again, is part of the reason why we started Up North News in the first place. There is such a lack of state political news to begin with, and then going into the weeds on the exact decisions and how they affect Wisconsin is something altogether different. And as I've said, there are great journalists covering state politics, and there are amazing people working on policy, like the Wisconsin Policy Forum, journalists like Dan Schaefer and Molly Beck and Patrick Marley before he went to the Washington Post, and many others. It's just that there's only so many of them. They only have so much of a readership or a viewership. And trust me, as somebody who's worked in radio and TV stations, you're continually hearing from consultants who say, do less political news, do less policy news. And that leads to voters who are not up to speed on exactly the way their tax dollars are being, you know, skimmed off the top of a pot and going to something that they don't know that they're paying for. These are the things that we need to talk about more, because otherwise what voters hear are very shallow messages about, I'll be tough on crime, I'm for school choice, I'll give parents a choice in where to send their kids, without explaining the ways in which they are decimating public schools and local services. And to take it in the case of Milwaukee, Milwaukee has or had, depending on your point of view, world-class county parks and nationally acclaimed public transit. But it is getting harder and harder to pay for those things with the restrictions that they have in place. And in fact, it makes it harder and harder to have enough cops on the streets. And I referenced that new story from Peter Cameron at the Badger Project about total number of police in Wisconsin. And I want to get to the Milwaukee numbers here. And I'm just scrolling just right. Let's see. The Milwaukee Police Department has 1,657 budgeted police officer positions, but employs about 1,600 officers. That 57-person shortage makes the police department about 3% understaffed. And yet, you know, that again, that's 57 more officers that could be used to keep the community safer. So when you have the allies of people like Tim Michaels, you know, saying that Milwaukee is out of control, well, yeah, because all kinds of legislators from outside of Milwaukee have put the restrictions in place. And that is, I mean, penny wise and pound foolish is a cliche, but, you know, it definitely applies in this case. And it leads to, you know, overtime for other officers, which is expensive. And then that leads to more turnover, and that's expensive. So all of these things all feed into the notion of having a governor and legislators who are doing more than paying lip service to policing, who are doing more than paying lip service to education, and who will actually pay for the things that are needed and not do what they're talking about in terms of, you know, like getting rid of property taxes or providing more, even more of a corporate break as if that were even possible in Wisconsin. We need answers and not just, you know, trite little pithy little slogans. So look for that between now and November. Ask them how they're going to pay for the bumper sticker concepts that they're so happy to talk about with millions of dollars in political ads. Maybe they could put some of those millions of dollars back into our communities. We'll be back with more after this. You're up north.
Every time I roll the dice.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Coming up in our next hour, Courier Newsroom political editorial director Carolyn Fiddler, and we'll talk about some of what's happening around the rest of the country. Wisconsin, far from the only battleground state that is having, shall we say, colorful elections this time around. It's just a unique season out there overall. But in this hour, we're basically kind of nerding out about state finances because we need to go a little bit deeper to get past just the rhetoric about everything from police services to education. And it's more than that. It's plowing the roads, it's economic development and what have you. And the model that Wisconsin used to use in more progressive times just isn't what it used to be, especially after more than a decade of Republican dominance. And so I've pulled up, again, a nonpartisan research group, the Wisconsin Policy Forum. And earlier this year, when we thought the state surplus was going to be somewhere north of $3 billion, again, still very healthy, much less the $5 billion that's forecast now, back when it was thought to be somewhere in the $3 billion range, the Wisconsin Policy Forum crunched the numbers eight ways to Sunday, and they noted that while there are a lot of people, you know, especially on the Republican side, but Democrats too, who would say, hey, let's cut taxes, and other people would provide state tax credits or state spending on certain things, you have an entire group of called local government that is saying, hey, how's about a little something here? How's about, you know, sharing the wealth? One of the more surreal moments early on when we started Up North News was covering an early 2020 meeting of the Wisconsin Counties Association. And so here is an audience in Madison of county executives, county board chairs, other county officials. And up on the stage are the leaders of the legislature talking about all the different ways they would spend back then an even smaller but still projected surplus. And they're basically talking right in front of all these county people about all the ways they're not going to help them, but rather do things that, you know, that make them look good. So the Wisconsin Policy Forum did a report this year asking, could the surplus help improve state-local relations? And there are ways to do that, you know, that basically sharing the wealth, which, by the way, sharing, not the same as socialism. If you're using that, you're using it wrong. Stop. So now the history lesson from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. In 1911, Wisconsin created the first state income tax in the country. I hear some of you going, oh, wow, that's where it all started. I hear others of you who recognize that, yeah, that's how we all fund the services that have made this state such a great place to live. Now, at the same time that they did this, they initiated a structure for financing not just state, but local services in Wisconsin. So that was something called shared revenue. And according to an old article on the Wisconsin Historical Society website that they found, municipalities actually initially received 70% of state income tax collections. Counties received 20%, and the state government only 10% of total state income tax collections. As the Wisconsin Policy Forum notes, over time, not only have the percentages paid to local governments dramatically declined, but the entire concept of sharing state tax revenues has all but been abandoned. With the exception of a half-cent local sales tax option granted to counties and then a similar Premier Resort area sales tax later on. Wisconsin's local governments have not received permission from the state to levy their own income or sales taxes beyond that very narrow sales tax that was approved in certain areas. So less revenue from the state that comes in from state income tax collections, and no way for local governments to make it up. And moreover, the Wisconsin Policy Forum notes, while state income tax collections have more than tripled since the early 1990s, appropriations for the shared revenue program have actually declined. And if inflation is taken into account, it's gotten even worse. So you add on to that levy limits and no ability to raise either sales or income taxes, and you then see the pressure on local units of government. And the Wisconsin Policy Forum doesn't take a position on policy, but they're essentially making this roadmap, and scribbled across the top of it is the word duh, because the roadmap is simply get back to what the initial design of the tax code was supposed to be. And that is taking care of all units of government, because there are services at all levels of government. If you want to have a debate about whether state government provides a particular service, sure, go ahead and debate that in the legislature. But to continually, for decades, stifle and then strangle and then penalize local government for wanting to provide services, when you said once upon a time you were the party of local control, really shows us who you really are. And so you can say things like, Governor Evers gave counties the green light to defund Wisconsin's police departments, as the Republican Governors Association said last month. But groups like PolitiFact from the Poynter Institute are going to say no, and they're going to give you a mostly false rating. The Republican Governors Association was citing a bill that was vetoed by Evers. And what the bill would have done is said that any state, any communities that cut spending on police would have their state aid reduced, as if state aid hasn't already been cut enough already, as I just explained. The Republicans would have gone a step further and further reduced state aid for any communities that cut spending on police. Evers vetoed it. But all the Evers veto did was maintain the status quo. It was not any kind of a step to encourage reduced spending on police. And in fact, Governor Evers has allocated $100 million in federal pandemic relief to help enhance local law enforcement across the state. So the claim that Evers somehow wants to and even authorized defunding the police, it's not true. There's not, it's like the election fraud. There's no evidence there that bears it out. And when you actually look at what somebody claims to be evidence, whether it's Evers defunding police or that 2000 Mules propaganda movie on Dropboxes, again, when you look at what are they really saying, what are they claiming, what's their evidence, what's their proof, it doesn't hold up. And that's really all anybody should ask of voters this year, is to look beyond the commercials, look beyond the lawn signs, look beyond the 30-second ads, and see if what they're promising or what they're claiming really holds up to scrutiny. Instead, I'd urge everybody to get more, again, into the weeds, into the details. We spoke earlier about how rather than throwing a Hail Mary, like a Foxconn type of thing, that you build a state economy, you know, step by step, brick by brick. And Governor Evers yesterday announced that there would be a new round of funding for a grant program that serves small businesses. The governor announced just about $16 million would be given to businesses as part of the Diverse Business Assistance Grant Program, which targets rural, veteran-owned, and LGBT-owned businesses that were disproportionately affected by the pandemic. Evers notes that the goal has always been to work toward ensuring the state economy works for everyone. And so when you invest in small businesses in the state, you're also investing in local jobs You're strengthening those local supply chains, fostering innovation and growth that build communities for years to come. And yes, this is more funding from the American Rescue Plan, the thing that, you know, President Biden put out that not a single Republican voted for. I will note that in Wisconsin, unlike other states, what we don't see in Wisconsin is a whole lot of Republicans showing up at groundbreakings and check ceremonies and pretending that they were any part of the money that's coming into the Wisconsin economy through these various infrastructure projects and other things. The biggest hypocrite about these that I can see out there is Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who has consistently showed up at events with big checks or has otherwise taken credit for money that's being spent in Florida through the American Rescue Plan that came from Joe Biden and Democrats alone. And now he's trying to basically bumper ski on that and say, me too. I don't know if bumper ski is the right term for that. I haven't done that for a long time. Was bumper skiing a term you've heard
no
or
idea what that
with?
Is. I have no idea what you were referencing. Just
really?
Zero. None.
Well, so, Grandpa has a story.
Okay.
Once upon a time, when it was it wasn't a snow day, but it was a heavy snow. And by the way, kids, don't try this. I didn't. Fortunately, I still have all my teeth. But on certain slippery, snowy days, some little idiots, when, you know, a car would stop at a stop sign or whatever, they would grab onto the back bumper and try to get pulled along the snowy road. Now, I suppose that's not a thing now because, you know, back in my day, God, I hate using all these phrases, but it just works. The bumpers were like completely separate, detachable. You could get your fingers inside and hold on to the bumper. Now they're, you know, ingrained as part of the car, so there's really nothing to grab onto. So you can't be like Ron DeSantis to the American Rescue Plan and clutch on and go, "Hey, look, I'm a car." No, you can't do that. And you know, if you could, you'd watch as the car slams on its brakes and, you know, you lose a tooth or something when you meet it like a cartoon figure. So, all right. So you didn't do anything that stupid as bumper skiing.
No, I also lived on a hill, so I don't think that would have been very smart to do, even if I did have a car bumper that I couldn't grip onto, because there was plenty of skin knees just falling off bikes and stuff like that, rather than needing to try to be Evel Knievel and ride a bumper up and down the hill
that
my family
lived
on.
Look at you with the Evel Knievel reference.
I still know pop culture. Like, I'm sorry, the bumper skiing didn't make its way down to me, but I know Evel Knievel.
But Evel Knievel still is out there. Well, I just didn't know if you said that, how many people would give you that Cocker Spaniel look where they tilt their head and go, "I'm sorry, who, what?" So, well, that's good. Which is funny because now in hindsight, I look back and, you know, Evel Knievel was really big when I was a kid. And now I can look back and I know I'm an adult now and everything, but I can look back now and go, "My God, that was dumb." But we just would celebrate that. He's jumping 7 buses. He's jumping 8 buses. He's jumping 14 buses. He's wiping out and breaking every bone in his body, which nowadays we would call ridiculousness and air it on MTV 24/7. But that's because so many people are willing to do now. He was the only idiot at the time.
It probably doesn't hurt that one of my good friends growing up was a big into dirt bikes. And so he tried to recreate some Evel Knievel stuff in his backyard. And I got to watch that. I never was silly enough to participate in it. But I was a willing bystander and probably encouraged him on many times when I maybe shouldn't have as a little kid. But that's okay. You live and you learn.
I did not get into the dirt bike scene. Of course, I grew up in a city where that wasn't as big a thing as maybe out in the country. But I also did not ever have anybody explain just the whole throttle concept to me, you know, that you pull back on the handle, you know, slowly to accelerate, much like you would, you know, just press on a gas pedal slowly to accelerate gradually. And so my only instance of trying a dirt bike, you know, it would be like trying to drive for the first time and just slamming the gas pedal to the floor, is I just pulled all the way back. I thought that's what you were supposed to do. And so I did the perfect circle. It went up and it came down right on top of me. And that was that. That I was just like, well, you know, I'm good. Turns out there's no evil Knievel in me. I'm not going to be able to jump anything. And in hindsight, I'm really okay with that. I didn't jump motorcycles. I didn't try to bumper ski. And as a result, I get to sit here and yodel for a living. So I'm a pretty happy camper that way. We'll be back with more. You're up north. Well, we're looking through the archives now, because we have been made aware that there is a new Mandela Barnes ad. So we just want to talk about the themes that he's using and trying to stick with and try to hold on to what appears to be a narrow lead currently in his race against Senator Ron Johnson. And as I mentioned, I was waxing poetic about the filming of political ads. And so, Luke, I don't think I've seen your eyes light up like that in some time when you asked if there might be a lot of excitement
behind this producer's board. Like, I'm sitting here all the time and I get excited about things, but it occurred to me that there's got to be a library out there of Pat Kreitlow campaign ads somewhere, potentially, that I can go find.
Well, here's the thing. I'm looking right now, and I'm up to the, let's see, sixth page of Google searches under the videos tab of Pat Kreitlow for Congress. And there are no commercials there from my campaign, just a whole lot of the ones that Republicans ran where, you know, I'm all focus out of focus and there's a dark filter and scary music and, you know, Pat Kreitlow wants to indoctrinate your children and stuff. So I'm sure you'll find them. You're a good sleuth, but anyway, but
Kreitlow for Senate TV is faster, 60-second TV commercial.
See, now that's different. I was looking at the congressional one. See, that one, the TV is faster one, is from my successful campaign when I got elected to state Senate.
I was just looking for them in general because we're going to have this conversation. So I just went to YouTube and I looked for all of them rather than.
Well, let me explain the commercial because I don't think it translates well on radio.
Obviously not. It's a television ad.
It's a television ad. So I just wanted to explain it before we get to the Mandela Barnes ad. But I was running against Dave Zien, a longtime incumbent Republican state senator, and anybody who knows him or of him knows him for his motorcycle. He rides Harleys everywhere. He put a million miles on one of his Harleys. He is a tireless advocate for veterans. I just happen to disagree with him on a lot of his other legislative stances and ran against him in 2006. Well, we thought we'd have a little fun with the motorcycle image that he's on the motorcycle, whereas I come at this from somebody who has been on TV. And so in the time it would take him, you know, to ride his motorcycle from point to point around the district, I could snap my fingers and be in one place or the other because that's what TV does. And then I made the pivot to being more responsive than Zien had been in all of these places. And so, yeah, I would just, we filmed in all these different locations with the same clothing. And one moment I'm in Neillsville and the next moment I'm in Kadot or something like that.
I have found one for Congress and you fall in the lake off of a log.
Oh, you found that one. That's my other favorite one. Now, this one, I don't know how we got into Pat Kreitlow commercial time, but I'll take it. This one, again, we're playing off of Sean Duffy and being a lumberjack and, you know, trying to show himself as a tough guy. And in this case, I wanted to go along with it. We already heard that I couldn't ride a dirt bike, so we sure as hell weren't going to see me riding a motorcycle. But we could have a little fun with the lumberjack stuff. And again, going that, look, I'm no lumberjack, but that's because I actually want to take seriously the things that you care about. So thanks to a supporter who let us use their cabin, we brought in a film crew and we, you know, brought out a log and we had, and this is great because I did want to talk about, you know, the behind the scenes of filming a political ad. When I get to that cabin, laid out in one of the bedrooms are, I think, four or five of the exact same outfit. You know, those weren't my clothes. They take your measurements. They look, you know, somebody professionally shops, wants to get just the right look, and then buys, like, I forget, five or six of them. Because that way, when you fall off the log, if the take isn't perfect, instead of waiting for the clothes to dry,
you get one more chance. Yeah.
You get one more chance and you put on the next set of clothes and you try again. I am happy to say we got that on the first take, which first we did practice in, you know, like street clothes, and then we did it in there. So yes, I have a little fun trying to roll on a log and falling right off of it. But of course, because it's TV, we initially start with the illusion that I'm actually, you know, on the log and, you know, maintaining. And then you see that, no, again, it's just, it's all TV gimmickry and, you know, much like Sean Duffy's career. So yeah, that was the congressional. And on that same day, we filmed the other one. I didn't know which one you'd find, where I'm throwing an axe.
That's in this one too. It's in the same one.
I throw an axe at a target and the target has, you know, Sean Duffy's budget plan or something on there, which again was abysmal for Northern Wisconsin and the country. But if anybody knows me or has listened to the early on in the show, you know, the district looks like it does right now because it was written in 2011 to protect Sean Duffy from me. If we had the old district lines, I probably would have cleaned his clock, but that's not how they roll. They changed the district substantially, and Duffy had been able to win several elections at that point, and now Tom Tiffany represents the area. But that didn't mean we didn't have fun trying to run the race. So yeah, there was axe throwing, there was log rolling, there was one where we were just stacking wood, you know, stacking wood alongside the cabin there in the woods to illustrate something about the budget, either what Duffy would cut from Medicare or Social Security or something like that. Because again, it was your typical consultant driven campaign of just talk about Medicare and Social Security. And one of my great regrets is that I didn't kind of assert myself more and say, hey, let's talk about this or this instead. But I deferred to the experts and, you know, really shouldn't have deferred to the consultants as much as I did. Anyway, I'm taking time away from the here and now. So Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes is running for U.S. Senate. He has been trying to really stick with, forgive the cliche, but a kitchen table campaign of what are the things that you, the voter, care about, and not getting into, you know, a lot of mudslinging or things like that. And so here's what's the title of the new commercial here, Luke?
Hard work.
Hard work. Let's give a listen.
Wisconsinites don't back down from hard work. We got self-starters and never stoppers. Folks who help feed a nation. Pioneers in innovation. Teachers and third shifters like my parents. You deserve a senator who protects your jobs, not one who sends them overseas. I work to bring manufacturing back home so we can make things in Wisconsin again. When we harness what we have, we can change where we're going. I'm Mandela Barnes, and I approve this message.
It is, you know, now that we've set it up this way, I can definitely think that people might be thinking, well, geez, that's rather generic sounding. But I like the design of the message. Because again, you're looking for people who just want to relate to the candidate. And Ron Johnson doesn't need any help in proving that he's not relatable, that he, as a multi-millionaire, couldn't give a rat's butt about helping a lot of, you know, working families out there, and that Mandela Barnes's background and his values are more in keeping with that. So again, you don't see any bold promises. You're just hearing a guy that says, you know, I'm here to work for you. I get you. I help you. And more importantly, what makes him a better candidate than me is he didn't let some consultant put him on a log and have him roll into a lake. We'll be back after this. You're up, North.
Under pressure.